Happy welcome to Game of Thrones with Jay, Jack, and Nick. My name is Jay.
I'm Nick.
And I choose violence.
And welcome to the show. The wonderful Shut Up Tim is filling in for Action Jackson this week. A bit of sad news. Jack's dad, my grandfather, passed away over the weekend. And, you know, it's been a tough week for our family. And thankfully, Nick and Tim are here to keep the Game of Thrones world going while Jack is obviously with family during this difficult time. But it's a tough time, but he lived a good life, and we're going to miss him very much. But on to more happier things to talk about. Or it depends if you're a book fan or not, I guess, because the book fans seem to have hated this episode. But we had a new episode of Game of Thrones to talk about. Woo!
Woo!
Woo.
So, you know, I get it. There wasn't much going on in this episode. There wasn't... yeah, I mean, not much happened. But really, is that your thoughts, Tim?
You know what? I just rewatched the episode and...
Hold on. I should get some context. Tim sure. is also a book reader, so this is probably the most educated Game of Thrones episode we'll ever have, but continue.
Well, I am Tim, so I don't know how educated that is, but I'm a book reader. I've actually... And by reader, books on tape, guys. It's the only real way to read. And I've actually listened to the whole series like twice.
Books on tape? Wow.
Yeah, books on tape. Yeah, I have a long commute. that being said, I've enjoyed the series. I actually got into the series in the first season. I actually kind of hate watched Game of Thrones starting. Wow. Starting on HBO, everyone was like talking about how good it was, and I just kept watching, and like each episode I was just like, what, all it is horse death and naked people, and I'm like I get it, it's medieval times, it's not, there's nothing exciting. And then you know, the second to last episode happened in season one that blew my mind, that like the person I thought would be, you know, the main character of the story, no more. Look at me. I'm all worried about spoiling season one. We're going to talk about season six or whatever. But yeah, Ned lost his head, and I was like, what the what? After that, I listened to the entire thing on tape before season two started. So, so I'm really enjoying the season for the fact that with very minorly no things, and a lot of the new stuff is shocking and new to me as well. So, you know, I knew about the Red Wedding. I knew about the Purple Wedding and all that stuff before watching the show. But it's good to actually watch stuff where, you know, shocking things happen. Unfortunately, this episode, not too much going on as far as like shocking or exciting things happening.
Nick, as our resident book expert, what are your thoughts? Similar kind of thoughts?
Yeah, like I had a really mixed reaction to this episode because I enjoyed it in pacing wise, but it debunked two really popular fan theories in one episode, and then even then it was just kind of like, oh, that's it? Oh, okay. it just kind of left you with an empty feeling, I felt.
I think also, yeah, right after watching it the first time, I was like, wow, this might be the worst episode of the season so far. But then I went back and rewatched it, and I think really there's one big storyline in this episode, and it's the Arya storyline that is just awful. It's terrible. It's too bad that it bookends, you know, it's the start and the end of this episode, because both scenes are utter garbage, and in my opinion, I feel like it's unwatchable, and it really makes the entire time that we spend in the House of Black and White totally useless.
But she learned some things, right? She can kill people in the dark because she was blind. I mean, that's something, right?
Yeah, and apparently she can heal all wounds by drinking soup. I mean, I mean, apparently all Jon Snow needed was like a soup and like some bandages from an actress. He
but
didn't
the actress,
even
she knows, she pokes a lot of people and she knows how to fix the holes.
Yeah.
That's what she said.
If only she was at the wall, we wouldn't have needed Melisandre, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I will agree, the gut shots, you know, with the stabbing, I was like, there's no way she lives, it's got to be somebody else. The way she was able to heal, you know, is a little whatever, but, you know, it's a TV show. But I get how it's, you have to kind of stretch.
Sure, there's dragons in this world also, guys.
Yes, exactly.
You know, you have to accept that. And for me, though, on the rewatch, I really liked like all the other storylines. Like I really liked the Hound. I thought the Jamie stuff was mostly good. I felt like maybe there's one Jamie scene that was bad, and Brienne, all those storylines, I ended up enjoying on the rewatch. So I'm just telling you, it's Arya taints this entire episode.
Yeah.
It's okay. Okay. Go ahead, Nick.
Well, I was just saying, because this whole, past two seasons, we've seen her trying to find who she is, which she does at the end of the episode. That's the one good part about it, is the redeeming. It's like, I am Arya Stark. But so she goes there. You're thinking, okay, she's going to get training. She's going to learn how to be this, you know, this awesome assassin. And then what? She fights with the staff and gets her butt whipped for four episodes. And then she never uses her to learn how to switch the faces. She doesn't learn anything other than what you just said. She learns to fight in the dark. Big deal. And it's just like, okay. What was the whole point of this? And is it just filler, the same way Danny's been filler? Like, oh, she rides on a dragon. She psychs her troops up, and then she rides on a dragon. It's like, move on. I mean, yeah. If you're not going to – we need some kind of substance.
Now,
oh, yeah. Yeah, well, Nick also reminded me that the Tyrion storyline was awful this week as well. Yeah. So talking about filler, you know, who is Missandei and Grey Worm like the two worst people to hang out with of all time? They seem like total buzzkills.
Well, to Nick's point, they've kind of repeated like story filler a couple times with – now, again, I think Dany's first kind of coming out of the fire and everybody bowing to her after killing – the calls was, you know, that was a great scene, a monumental scene. I thought it was fantastic. But then the whole her on a dragon rallying the troops again was kind of redundant after the burning of the hut or whatever. Now we have this him trying to banter with these two people that are, like, to Nick's point, the most boring people ever. And it's just kind of a retread of a scene that was already not a very good scene.
Mm. My feeling is we're going to get to the end of this season. We're going to see, you know, Dany riding a dragon across a narrow sea. And that's how we'll end this season. And so the next season's all going to be about her ending up in Westeros. And so I think the problem is it's like, well, why doesn't she just go now, you know? And so we're just slowly creeping that way.
Well, she's waiting for all of her ships.
Yeah, she's waiting for,
you know. The Greyjoys are going to give them.
Yeah. Theon to show up. Yeah, next episode, exactly.
I will say, watching that, when the ships came up for the Masters, Colleen thought they were going to be Greyjoy ships. I was like, oh, man, Nick's going to be pissed.
I actually was for a half a second. And I went, oh, it's not them.
Yeah, apparently they have fast travel this season for everywhere.
But not to sit here and just knock the episode. I thought there was a lot of good stuff in here. The mountain ripping off people's faces was pretty cool.
Oh yeah, Predator style.
Predator style. We had some great stuff with Cersei and some rumors and if they are true or not, which I think might be a big part of our discussion in the recap. But So why don't we take some time to jump in the recap? But before we do that, I want to thank people that make this show possible. Our patrons over at patreon.com/JayandJack. Become a patron today by contributing either just something as small as $1 or up to $500. You have a bunch of different levels. If you check it out at patreon.com/JayandJack, you can find a link on jayandjack.com and click the Become a Patron link. Without any further ado, let's get into this recap. Nick, take it away.
Woohoo! All right. So we open up in Braavos, back at the actor's play, and we see Lady Crane actually taking Arya's advice with the character death of Joffrey, and she acts it out in anger this time, which is just a huge applause, you know, by the audience, because she's, you know, now she's no longer just affectionately showing. She's actually mad, you know, and wants to get the vengeance. So it was nice to see that she respected Arya enough to take this advice as an actress.
When it worked, it was a really good scene. I was watching it with Colleen's sister, who has only watched a couple episodes. She's like, oh, I thought that was part of the story. It was so good. But
Yeah, I had the opposite feeling. I was like, oh no, I was like, oh no, the actress is back. No more actress. I'm like, this is taking the Arya story away from all the fan, you know, theories of what Arya was going to be. And once the actress showed up, I'm like, oh, this is where we're going. Great.
But she goes backstage after the performance, and she hears almost starts to drink her wine, and I was kind of thinking, oh my god, did she forget about the part that Arya had poisoned that too? But she doesn't drink it because she hears a thud, and it turns out it's Arya laying there stabbed. And at this point, I'm like, what? I'm wrong? Like I really believe that it wasn't Arya because everything for the previous two episodes had kind of led us to believe this, that this wasn't Arya because she had different clothes, the way she walked, the way she spoke, where did she get the gold, all these things. Yeah. It's like, what? This really was Arya that got stabbed? It's like, what kind of an idiot just walks around after you leave an assassin learning school and all of a sudden you're just going to skip around the town like, oh, I'm having fun, and then you get stabbed? Like, it seemed so crazy to me that this actually was Arya that got stabbed.
That's fair. Yeah. Now, do you think the internet is up in arms over this kind of the closing out of the Arya storyline? Do you think they just kind of ran out of time to really give it any type of like multi layered detail or give it the storyline it deserved in this? And that's why this was kind of a rushed close to the storyline. I think there's a lot more that could have happened within the storyline.
I mean, I blame D&D. For it, because I think they're unoriginal producers. I mean, I think they've done a great job producing this show. I think it's a great show, but it seems like when actually the writing is on their shoulders, they just take the least path to resistance. And with this, they have totally messed up Arya's storyline. And I just didn't. I mean, I love Arya, and the fact that they took it out of chronological order, and then they just kind of said, okay, now she's done there. Let's just send her home. It's like, you couldn't have put in a few more scenes, or you couldn't have thought of something original. You don't even have to consult with George R. R. Martin. Just think of something cool to do. And then they didn't. They just said, okay, now it's time for her to go home.
Now, is this, would you say, is this almost like, because it seems like they're better adapters than they are creators. Now, is this because they've spent the past five seasons just adapting work, and now this is the first time they have to create work, so they haven't really built a great creative team because all they've been doing is adapting this whole time, and now they're at a place where they have to actually create, and they haven't developed that skill over the past five seasons?
Right. And that's kind of what I'm saying. I said this last week, too, or week before last, is that exactly they're following the books, and then all of a sudden this season, that's where you're getting this rushed feeling from. Some people are really enjoying the fast pace of this season, but you can tell where instead in the slow burn, the way George R. Martin writes, if like something is going to happen. Because if you look at any of the seasons, it's always been that way. Like the first few episodes are billed, and then all of a sudden, like, holy crap moment. And this is just kind of like little quick holy crap moments after one after another instead of a big reveal. And then a lot of those times, they're disappointing in what you do get.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think it's also part of the problem is how limited we are with how many Game of Thrones episodes there are actually left in the entire series. If we believe them and there's only like one more, you know, extended season or two more seasons or whatever, you know, two seven seasons, we're only looking at like 15 more episodes of Game of Thrones ever. And it's like, well, where is George going with you know, Arya's story? And with his two more books, he could spend pages and pages and pages of Arya resolving her House of the Black and White. But if the producers of the show know that, well, Arya is ultimately going to end up back on Westeros for the main conflict of the series, we need to get her there now because we have to set it up and put her on her way. And basically what she's doing here now is exactly, she's learning how to fight in the dark. Or I guess if you really want to look at it, she had to go to the House of Black and White to learn who she really was. And she isn't no one. She is Arya Stark.
Right. I mean, like I said, that's the one redeeming quality of the Arya part in this episode, is that she, at the end, is confident, I am Arya Stark. Mm-hmm. And you're like, yeah. Okay, great.
Yeah. But Nick, I agree with you 100%. As a book reader, Arya is like one of the best first-person perspective characters in the entire series. I feel like she might even be like George R.R. Martin's favorite character to write, or at least the top three. And it is just like, I can't believe I hate Arya's story, because every chapter with her is a delight when reading or listening to the novels.
Oh, and like when I read Feast for Crows first time and there was only two chapters of Arya, yeah. I'm like, what? Are you kidding me? Like, it just, it was devastating.
Yeah.
Anyway, go back with the actual episode.
This is going to be like a 7-hour episode. Thanks, Tim.
Oh, yeah, that's my curse to the Jack universe. Sorry, guys.
The next thing you see is Lady Crane patching up Arya, and it's kind of like what Tim was saying earlier. It's like, she twisted the knife in her twice in her stomach, and it's like, all you have to do is just mend you up and here's some soup. And it's like, I always liked bad men, so I'd stab them and then patch them up. So apparently Lady Crane is a psycho. And then she does kind of come back and says, okay, we're gonna go to Pinto, she should come with us. And then Arya is like, no, I won't be safe there, she's looking for me. And this was the one interesting part, was that she's like, what's west of Westeros? Which no one knows.
Yeah, yeah.
So Arya clearly has some kind of plan of just not even really. She wants to go to Westeros, obviously, but continue on. She still wants to be her own person, not a part of that world. So she's like, I'd like to see that. And then Lady Crane gives her milk of the poppy, and that's the end of the scene.
Mm-hmm.
Which,
did anybody feel like maybe the milk, like it was actually the waif here going to like basically kill her with drugs?
I was kind of feeling it.
That's what they wanted us to feel. That's why she's like shocked, because she knows don't drink anything, especially, you know, she saw time and time again in the House of the Black and White, if you drink anything, you could die, you know, and that's
it
why
is their calling card.
Yeah, that's why that scene early on when, you know, Jockin is like, here, drink this, and she's like, okay, she has to trust him to get her eyesight back, because she knows that pool is like liquid death.
Right.
Anyway.
And then moving on, we have a series of three short scenes come up. The first one is a few members of the Brothers Without Banners are at a campsite, and one of the older guys is teaching one of the younger guys the art of seduction of how to kiss a woman, which I kind of felt that the guy who was giving the lesson kind of got the short end of the stick, because who wants to stick your finger up a guy's butt? I mean, I was just like, what?
I think that's Tim's favorite technique.
Oh,
I told, hey Jay, that one time we kissed, I thought you wouldn't tell anybody. Short end of the stick. I loved what you did there, Nick, with that description of that move. Yeah, but you know, I got to say, the guy that, like, you know, did receive the short end.
That's
got
no
it
different
worse.
Than like it's like the modern version would be a teabagging, if you will. Would that be the?
I guess.
You get, what, like 30 seconds of a funny joke, but the guy's hand will probably smell like crap for the next day or two. It's just like,
they probably stink of crap anyway. Like,
yeah, those guys stink for sure. But the dude who got the digit dropped on him, he immediately gets killed by like the best, like the Hound is like totally doing Jason or Mike Myers in the background, and you know, it just needed the sound effect as he came walking up with the axe. The Hound's great. I'm glad he's back.
Yeah, let's talk about the good things. This was pretty badass. This was a great, great scene. Great vengeance. We were wondering kind of which way it was going to go. I think we kind of felt like which way it was going to go, but still, it was a pretty badass, just smiting of those individuals.
Yeah, yeah, and apparently what we did learn in this episode was the way Brother Ray brought the Hound back to life was he gave him some soup and just gave him some bandages.
Yeah. But to me, it almost kind of felt like, was it season 2 or 3 when Brienne killed the men on the road with Jamie. It's kind of the same thing of just like quick kills, just like ah, and then I just love it. You know, the guy's been disemboweled, and the hound's just mocking him the whole time. You know,
you're that's bad it. At that's dying.
Your, yes, yeah. It was great. It was great.
That's your last words. And then the guy's next word was awesome.
See you next Tuesday.
Yes.
The next short scene though is in Marine, and we have Varys and Tyrion walking through the streets, and you're seeing their plan kind of come into effect a little bit, because you have a red priestess praising Dany and how she's the chosen one and she's here to save them and all that. And then you have Varys saying he's leaving for Westeros on a secret mission, you know, to get ships and to find new friends. And that's really just the whole purpose of the scene, is just to say goodbye to Varys. But I did like the little bit about I can't be seen with the most famous dwarf in this city. And, of course, the ego of Tyrion, I'm the most famous dwarf in the world. But, you know, that was it. But I enjoyed it.
Yes.
And only... Tim and I know what Varys is going to do.
Well, possibly.
Possibly.
I mean, it depends what they, if and where. I mean, I think there's like discussion. There could be a couple different options where. But if they do follow the book, we possibly know what's going to happen.
Is it too spoilery for what happens in the book stays in the book, or will that be in the what happens in the book stays in the book section?
I
think at this point it's too spoilery for the book section. But, I mean, people who read the books already know anyway. But we can talk about it if you want. But it's not relevant to this episode yet.
Okay.
The next scene, we have King's Landing. And Cersei is disturbed by Qyburn. It says that the Faith Militant is there to see her. And the king is the one who allowed them in. The High Sparrow has summoned Cersei to come back to the Sept, to which she refuses. And then her cousin Lancel says, you were never allowed. She's like, oh, don't give me that crap kind of thing. Like, and then the Mountain steps in, and he threatens that there'll be violence. Cersei says, I choose violence. And you can see this kind of cockiness that she knows she's got them. Like, you know, like, yeah. You know. It's another great death scene in Game of Thrones. You just see this guy comes forward, smacks an axe, and it's one of those that pierced the armor. You know, it went into the guy, into the mountain's chest, and it's just kind of like, whoa, he's still standing. And then exactly, he tosses him like a rag doll, and then Predator style rips his head and spine completely out of his body. And you just, I love the faces of all the little sparrows. They're just kind of like, no, yeah, I'm not going near that.
Yeah, so speaking of Jason again, is Zombie Mountain, is he like invulnerable? Like, do you have to chop off his head to kill him or something? Because, I mean, he took those spikes right to the chest and it was like, no, MBD.
True. It's very true.
You wonder, is he like Wolverine or what? Like, can you just, what do you just.
I think he's more just undead. Like, is there even any blood in him? Do we even know? Like, what is powering him? Because he did see the bleed when he got like punctured in the chest.
Right. So I was saying, is he going to be like a true zombie? Like, do you have to remove his head or crush the brain? You know, it's just, that's it. You don't know. Well, I mean, it's, we're not there in the books yet either, so we don't know how the mountain is going to be defeated.
We just need the hound to walk up behind him, chop off his head, and see if the body keeps moving, you know?
That would actually probably be a pretty cool reveal, like, if in the game Bowl, as it's called, he chops off his head, but he keeps going.
Yes,
it's just, and he says, you know, the hound just has that face like, F me.
Yeah, why'd you have to bring up the hound's face, man? Oh my gosh.
Anyway,
all right, so the next scene we have Brienne and Podrick arrive at River Run, to which I actually liked these scenes. She arrives, she sees Jaime below, and Lannister men arrive, and she requests to see Jaime. You don't see them actually meet or anything, but so we are treated to a nice little scene between Bronn and Pod, to where I enjoyed it because it was just a little lighthearted scene of just him kind of trying to mess with him, like, you're a little too young to be a squire and all this, you know, and then asking, because, I mean, it's obvious now to to Bronn and to Podrick that Brienne and Jaime kind of have a little side crush going on. Because he's like, do you think they're screwing in there? He's like, I'd screw. You know, he's like, she's my lord or whatever. He's like, oh, come on. You know, like, I'd mess with her. It's actually quite irritating, isn't it, the way women look at him. So, you know, Bronn's jealous over how good-looking Jaime is to this day, how all the women still envy him. And Broderick's come back, you know, like, well, so what are you doing with her? And he's like, well, she's training me how to fight. He's like, well, how can I sneak up on you if you're such a good fighter? And then he says, widen your stance out. Show me your fighting stance. And then so Prod's like trying to be professional and like getting together, and just Bronn just smacks him out of nowhere. He's like, assume everyone wants to hit you because everyone wants to hit a squire, you know? And it's just great. It's a great little lighthearted scene.
It was good. It was like a nice little reunion. Everyone was Bronn, so it was great.
Apparently, everybody wants to grab everyone's junk or butts too in this episode.
That's another thing that Bronn did. He's like, show me your magic, you know, your stuff. He goes, you've got it, you know. It's like he never forgets that Podrick apparently was great in the sack with all these prostitutes in King's Landing.
Hey, so he's gifted. He's a gifted individual. Yeah.
So the next scene we jump to is Jaime with Brienne, and Jaime, it's a really another lighthearted kind of scene, but yet quasi-serious. But Jaime is really proud of Brienne because she did fulfill her oath to Catelyn Stark. Now she's with Sansa, she's protecting her. And he's like, so what brings you here? And Brienne's like, I'm here for the Blackfish. She's like, oh, great, me too, you can have him. But we need to take, both of them would like to take Riverrun without bloodshed. And Brienne is trying to say, like, do it without bloodshed, because then this will allow me to take the Tully forces into the north to help aid in the liberation of Winterfell. And she wants Jaime's word that if this is accomplished, that he'll give him safe passage. He says, of course, he agrees to it, because if you can convince that old stubborn man, go for it. And so she's like, fine. So Brienne tries to give him back Oathkeeper, which is the Valyrian steel sword that came from ice. Yep. Which was Ned Stark's sword. And but Jaime is real nice about it. He says no. He goes, no, it's yours. It'll always be yours. So Brienne keeps it. And then she kind of drops the other shoe on him and says, you know, if I should fail in my mission, honor compels me to fight for Sansa and her family, which will be the Tullys and the Starks, which will make us enemies. And he just says, let's hope that doesn't happen. But
yeah. Yeah, it was a great scene, and I'm glad that he did not take back Oathkeeper, because it truly should be there trying to help the Stark side of the things. I think it's very poetic.
Well, also, his sword hand's cut off, so he's not good with a sword anyway, so he might as well just give it away, you know, the Valyrian steel, because what's he going to do with it, you know?
It's very, very true.
It's very pretty.
I also think that this like scene, the end of the scene where Brienne says like, you know, honor compels me to have to fight you, and he says let's hope that it doesn't come to it. I think this is big foreshadowing. This paired with like the final scene between the two of them, I think this, it's gonna happen. Like maybe not this season, but probably by the end. And I don't know. I get a sense that, you know, one of their fates is going to be in the other person's hands.
And I think Jaime, in my opinion, my theory is Jaime will lay down and Brienne will have to either spare him or take his life. I lean to spare him.
Or I could even go for something more bolder than that, because I've always believed that Jaime will be the one that kills Cersei. Like, what if it comes to the point where it is Brienne or Cersei's life and it's Jaime has to choose between one or the other, would he choose Brienne over Cersei? Because what if it gets to that point where they're on the same battlefield or in some situation where Brienne is fighting for the life of someone that she's sworn to protect? And then, I don't know, it's just a weird idea, but that's what I thought.
Fascinating.
Okay, so the next thing we see is with Brienne and the Blackfish, and the Blackfish is still being stubborn the way he is. He says, I don't know you. I don't know Sansa, which makes total sense. She was just a little girl. And if you think I'm going to abandon this castle, you're a bloody fool. And besides, you're working for Jaime Lannister. And she's like, no, I'm not. I'm working, you know, I was sworn to Catelyn. I'm sworn to Sansa. He's like, yeah, who allowed you in here? Who gave you that sword? And I mean, he's making really valid points. And then he, you know, then she comes back and says, no, Jamie has kept his word exactly to what he said he's going to do with trying to find your, you know, because he gave me the sword so I could find Sansa.
You know what this scene, you know what this scene comes down to is that this was just a bad call on Sansa's part. Why send Brienne to do anything? You know, yeah. Like other than killing Stannis, Brienne has failed at almost everything that she's attempted to do on this show.
It's true.
And I feel like had Sansa sent Davos or even Tormund Giantsbane, I think the Blackfish would be up at Winterfell like post haste.
Yeah, Tormund really like a wildling? I don't know.
I think he had the better shot than Brienne ever had.
Well, it's true in that Brienne is one of the worst salesmen in history. I mean, how many times did she swear allegiance to people for them to go, I'm good. No, I don't really want you. So
the only time Sansa finally said yes was when she was like desperate in the cold, going to die.
Exactly. I have hyperthermia. What do I have to lose?
Yeah.
I'm going to be eaten by a dog. I might as well let you be my protector. Yeah.
But you know, I get that, but it's also like Northerners are some of the most frustrating people because, you know, I get that he's like, well, I want to defend my home. I want to defend my home. Honor, honor, honor. It's like, yes, but you could like really kind of help shift things and you just want to like blow it on just wanting to stay home. It's just so frustrating. Just as bad as the Starks sometimes.
Oh, yeah. But Brienne does force the note into the Blackfish's hands and he reads it and says she's exactly like her mother, which I don't know what that means. But
same handwriting.
Yeah. But then he finally does let up a little bit. He says, I don't have enough men to take Winterfell. And said, basically, he's like, the only way he's leaving it is if the Lannisters conquer the castle the same way everyone else does. And that's it. And he leaves it at that. And Brienne admits defeat and says, you know, send a raven to Sansa to tell her that I failed.
No, hey, spoiler, you don't have to send that raven. It's just everyone's just assuming, you know, like Sansa could have just said, hey, Brienne, you need to go down to like, you know, River Run and just stand in the corner. OK, yeah, thanks. But no, thanks.
That's great.
Yeah. Now, this next scene here was short, but I did enjoy it because it's a scene that could happen in the books, but you never know. And it goes back to King's Landing, and you see Cersei and the Mountain approach the Iron Throne, and there's the royal court has all gathered, and she demands to know from her Uncle Kevin, like, why was I not told? To which he just kind of smart-aleckly goes, there's going to be a announcement. It's like, oh, wow. And he says, and then she tries to go and stand next to Tommen. He says, no, your place is with the rest of the ladies of the court. So she does kind of humbly go there, and you see Tommen really just drop the hammer on his mom of just saying that, you know, once again, the crown and the faith, the two pillars, and if one falls, the other falls. So Loras and Cersei, his own mother, will be held accountable for their crimes, and they will be held by trial in front of the Sept. And to top this, he says that trial by combat is now outlawed throughout the Seven Kingdoms, which this not only is devastating to Cersei because she was counting on the Mountain saving her life, but it's also a blow to a lot of fans out there who wanted to see the Clegane Bowl.
Yes.
of the Mountain versus the Hound. And it's like, okay, what's this?
Honestly, I think what this does is it makes it more likely to see the Clegane Bowl, because why would, you know, the Hound ever show up and like be the faith militants side? I mean, I know we saw he was kind of going more on the religious bent, but now we see that, like, you know, we'll see on the later scene, he's going to end up probably with the Brothers with No Banners. And I think I could see them riding against the, you know, the Lannisters, more so coming forward than actually like having this trial by combat. So I'm fine with it. And you know what? Cersei is my least favorite character of all time, pretty much. So anytime, and like, I feel like the show's been really doing a job trying to make us like her a little bit. And I refuse. Mm-hmm. I will never like her. So yeah. any little screw to like, put the knife in Cersei's side and twist, you know, like anytime we can get that, and hopefully they don't have any soup, Well, we know they have soup and flea bottom, so.
And Bravos.
But I get this, the point though, like the tribal combat at least has like the arena and it's just a true, you know, just a gladiator match where now it might seem more of like an in battle of some sort.
Well, I don't know about battle. I think she I've actually been a trial, as in the faith will try.
I'm saying the game bowl because as Tim was saying about it makes more sense that he would be with the Brothers with No Banners, and then they would be going against the Lannisters, and that would be more of a battle-type situation between the two of them, whereas Trial by Combat would be more of like a, you know, gladiatorial arena match.
Well, yeah. It's true, because in the novella, the first Hedge Knight story, there is a Trial by Seven, but it's because it's at a joust tournament, and it's where they choose seven people versus seven people, and the last one standing, you're set free. But I don't know if they mean it by that or not, because that's really even more of a bloody way of getting justice, is in, you know, anywhere from 13 to 2 people are going to die. So it could be that way, or it could just be an actual proper court.
Yeah, I think proper court, because still the Mountain would probably arguably win that matchup as well.
Mm-hmm.
Even though Loras did beat him, actually, right? Because that was in the first season, they did a joust, and Loras beat him.
Yeah, Loras beat him. Yeah, it's true.
That's when he chopped off the head of his horse.
Of his horse, yeah.
But anyway.
But it leads us to this last little tidbit here, which to me is really interesting, of Qyburn walking up to Cersei and saying, pertaining to that old rumor, my birds have investigated. She goes, is it true? And he goes, much more, much more. And the only thing that's really logical from this is, because we've seen it in Bran's visions, is that the Mad King has left veins, I would think, of wildfire hidden throughout the Red Keep. And Cersei has even said that, and in like season 2 or 3, you know, if you think I'm going to let you take my children or let you destroy my family, I will burn this place to the ground before I let that happen. And so it's just, it seems that this is might come true.
Was it second season Dany's flashback with she's in the main throne room and it's all like burnt down or whatever, winter?
Right. And her vision in the House of the Undying, she sees she's in the Red Keep with it completely burned down. Mm-hmm. So it seems like it's coming to fruition.
Fruition.
Yeah, okay. That it
one of the words. Yeah, it's one of those.
One of those, yeah. It makes sense.
Yes, absolutely.
The next scene, we're back in Meereen, and Tyrion is quite happy because he's drinking. And it's one of these forced scenes again that was just like, okay, we get it. But he's his two Debbie Downer colleagues are. He's like, why don't you drink? He's like, we don't drink, you know. And it's like, why don't you drink? Because of rules. He's like, well, who made these rules? And he's like, okay, give me a drink. You know, it's just like, all right. Then she's like, it made me feel funny. That's how you know it's working. It's just, you know, it's just like, okay, I get it. They drink to Dany, and then they turn to jokes, and Tyrion tells, I actually think I'd heard this joke before. I think it's a common joke amongst states of, like, you know, amongst Irish people, you know, like, you know, the Irish person doesn't want, you know, give me the liquor back.
Yeah. But
it seemed forced.
Yeah, because I mean, they already tried it before and it just didn't really work because they're so the other characters are so stiff by their nature. So it did seem like we gotta get Tyrion some airtime in here, so let's just come up with a thing, which was the previous scene that was kind of like that. So
it's like, why are we giving Grey Worm and Missandei any scenes? Like, if they're not standing next to Daenerys, who cares? It's like you want to give me a scene? Just have put Tyrion with some prostitutes again. You know, like what's going on? Like, just put him with anybody other than these two. I know it's like, oh, look at the contrast, and he's trying to relate to them. But you think after like the, you know what? In fact, if anything, hey, put Tyrion back down in the dungeon with those dragons. What happened? He unhooked those dragons. Where are they? They're just chilling now because they don't have collars on. Like, I need more of the other two dragons. You know?
Yeah.
Who cares about Grey Worm?
Agreed.
But you know, like I said, the only reason to have this entire scene is just to show that the Masters have returned because they start bombarding the city with fire, and they're like, oh crap. And then, you know, Grey Worm's just like, yeah, see, I told you, you know. And that's it. That's the only reason. And exactly what you're saying, Jay, though, you did. You thought for a half a second it was the Ironborn. And you're like, oh, but then why are they bombarding the city?
Yeah.
And then,
yeah.
Oh.
Well, they won't say through their banners, like, oh, okay, it's not the squid. It's some, you know.
Right.
It's a non-friendly.
Yeah. Okay, so we move on now to Jaime visits Lord Edmure Tully, and he promises him that he'll be treated better, and Lord Edmure says, my uncle is never going to surrender the fort, you know. And he's like, yeah, but you have a child. You know, Jaime tries to sympathize with him a little bit. He's like, you have a child now, a son you've never met. You know, if you do all this, if you surrender the fort to me, I'll arrange that you'll be able to see your kid, and you can raise them at Casterly Rock, and, you know, you'll live a very nice life. And Edmund doesn't really believe him because he's just kind of like, you know, like, you're an evil man, you know. And then Jamie's like, only gods can judge that. And he's like, but how do you live with yourself? You know, it's kind of a sparring thing. And then Jaime finally just cuts to it and says, you know what? I was in your sister's presence once. She hit me in the head. And it's nice. But then she's like, but she hated me, but she admired me. And he's getting to this because he's saying, I love Kat. I'll do anything to get back to her. So if I have to kill your wife, I have to kill your entire family to get back to Cersei, I'll do it. And it kind of was reminiscent of the old Jaime, of this person that's just cruelty and doesn't think about anyone but himself. Thoughts?
The problem with this one is it kind of showed the sexual tension between Bran and Jaime, and then it tries to make me believe that I don't believe the love he has for his sister anymore. I don't see it. Or maybe it's just the whole, you know, incest angle that I just can't really grasp. But I don't believe his love.
Right.
That's interesting, Jay, because I was going to say the love between Brienne and Jaime we see, but I don't get a sexual tension between the two of them. I think, like, that's inferred maybe because of what Bronn said, but I think we get the absolute love between the two of them, and that they are two characters that love one another like a brother and sister almost. And we know how Jaime feels about brothers and sisters, but
I don't see that same love between him and Cersei. Like, it's almost like it's a toxic relationship.
Yeah, well, yeah, clearly, because Cersei's the worst, but and Jaime's pretty bad too. Don't forget, he's the guy who pushed Bran out the window. Siri's talking to me again. Sorry.
Spoiler alert.
But what I want to say is remember when, like, the whole incest thing was a secret on this show? Like, they did their best to keep people from knowing that they were, like, hooking up with each other. And now in, like, the last two seasons, it's like, yeah, everybody knows. Well, Tommen's clearly a child of incest. You know, it's like they're not even worried about that anymore. And he's like, he tells Edmure, he's like, I love my sister. And it's like, and I feel like the way that he said it really implied that, like, more than a sister.
He did even echo the same line too of, in things we do for love, that's the same line he said before he pushed Bran out the window. And then he said it to Edmund Edmure when he's saying that. I was like, oh, that's kind of weird.
Yeah, so is that like his calling card when he's about to do something horrible?
I guess. Yeah,
he's gonna catapult a baby into a coverage.
Yeah, but whatever.
But Edmure does kind of concede, I guess, even though they don't show it. And he approaches the gate, to which the Blackfish thinks he's just been brainwashed and doesn't want him to allow him into the fort. And the soldiers there are really confused, but that is loyalty, let me tell you.
Good,
you know,
Lord.
The fact that,
Lord, you're not my lord, you lord.
But you're not my lord, Lord. He's my lord, Lord. Lord.
They do eventually let him in, and he surrenders the River Run to the Lannisters begrudgingly. And that's
I like the part where we saw the Frey guy go to Jaime like, if you're wrong, you gave away our best prisoner ever. And it's like, well, what other prisoners do you guys have? Like, I don't you got the one guy And you have that stupid hat you're wearing. Yeah. Yeah. Thanks, bro. Let's see what happens before you start judging me. You guys lost the castle. I mean, you want to point blame.
Yeah. I mean, but really at that point, I mean, there was nothing valuable to him anymore. It's like, you know, you're not going to kill him. So what's the point? You just mm-hmm. let him go and see if he'll actually do the gentlemanly thing or the civil thing. And he did. So it all worked out.
Yep.
I guess if you're rooting for the Lannisters, it worked out.
Yeah. But, yeah. But Jaime and the Lannisters enter the fort, and he orders the Blackfish people. Oh, actually, well, this was really strange, I thought, character-wise, for Tully to order the Blackfish to be put into chains and then hand him over to the Freys. Then the Blackfish helps Brienne and Pod escape, but he decides he wants to stay and fight because I guess he just wanted to die a hero's death.
He didn't want to be on the show anymore. He's like, I'm good. He's like, I could go up to the north with you guys, but then I'd have to be on the show some more. So I'm just going to stay here.
But again, exactly. Is this kind of like a loose end storyline? It's kind of being quickly tied up.
Exactly. Yeah. I think there was a couple of things in this episode. I felt this was an easy way for the producers to say no more money for this guy or no more money for that scene. Why would I show Arya fight when I can just blow out a candle and then save, you know, a couple $100,000?
Yeah. Yeah, same thing with Danny just like walking in, and then you kind of see a dragon off in the distance. Sorry, spoiler alert.
And then the Blackfish dies off screen, and it's like, he's like, I'm not a very good fighter, so I probably embarrassed myself. Cut to, bring me the Blackfish. Oh, he died. And then Jamie's like, okay, yeah, moving on.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's like what Jay was saying. It's the same with Danny. It's like the dragon taxi service that just drops her off at the top floor and she just strolls right in. They're like, oh, wow, that's convenient.
It's cheaper to do noisy sounds on the ceiling. It's much easier. We just have some guys out there banging. Oh, man.
But we did get a touching wave from Jamie and Brienne as she's floating
down
the river.
See, I'm saying, that feels like love.
That is true. That's the true love. I think that might be the truest love in this entire show is between those two, because they're bonded. Yeah, you know, when you guys fight a bear, it really bonds you together, you know. But here's my question. Why did Brienne and Podrick have to escape? Why couldn't they just been like, hey, Jamie, let us go? And I feel like Jamie would have been like, okay, bye, guys. Clearly he's sitting there watching him go. Is like the other troops that he's commanding going to be like, nope, killed, you're dead?
It's a very good point.
And to me, although like seeing this moment was like actually a really sad moment for me, because I feel like this is them saying goodbye. This is the last time we'll see each other as friends. Like, I don't think like when they get back together, it's no longer, you know, her oath is completely done to Jaime as far as like keeping his oath to Catelyn to blah, 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 you know, placing the oath blame. And so I think that like, you know, the Northern Army is going to run into the Lannister Army at some point, and then that's it. They're no longer friends. So that's really what they're waving goodbye at.
I mean, it's very poetic if that is the case. Yeah. It'll be sad too, and it was a very melancholy, bittersweet wave. So
really, it's just their entire story coming to fruition.
Aw, dick.
<Ba-dum-tsh>. I think you're dead on though with that. I'm just not gonna comment. I guess if we're only gonna get two more seasons of seven episodes, then this is probably right the last friendly thing we'll have, because they're probably bound to fight. Even though Brienne could totally kick his butt. I mean, he's only got one hand.
She took down the Hound. That rhymed.
That and if it doesn't come to the two of them fighting, it's the last time they see each other. I mean, that could be it also, because. You know, I feel like Jamie's probably going to die first if either of them die.
Are you trying to put on some edict here on the show?
Yeah, Jamie's got a total dead edit.
Survivor joke there. See, we put one in there. See, that's good. That's good. Anyway, let's move on.
Yeah. Well, the next scene we've already kind of covered, but yeah, the ships are bombarding Marine again with fire, and they believe it's the slavers. Grey Worm puts out some strategy, which is just stay in the pyramid, and then they feel that soldiers have already gotten to the pyramid, and then voila, Dany arrives, and she's back.
Hooray!
Yay! And that's it. Short scene.
Did Dothraki fly in her dragon?
Hey, Dany, maybe don't land on the dragon. Maybe fly the dragon over the boats and light them on fire.
Well, I think we maybe assume you see the dragon in the distance. The dragon's just taking care of business while she can, you know.
No, the dragon's flying away. He's flying away from the pyramid. He's like, bye, Felicia.
He's flying over the ocean. You don't know for sure.
It's true, though. Like, she could take out that entire armada in probably two swoops of that dragon and just burn every ship to the, you know, the bottom of the ocean. But she doesn't. Now I'm just going to land.
We'll just wait for the Ironborn to show up, and then we get ship battles instead of a dragon taking care of it in a second.
Right.
Who knows? I don't know. That's a total conjecture. Yeah. No book spoilers.
The next scene, we have the Hound walking, and he comes upon the Brothers Without Banners with Beric Dondarrion. And he's hanging the Brotherhood guys that killed the village the Hound was in. So this was kind of a relief to me that at least they corrected
the
weird character shift that he said that, no, these guys were part of us, but they're not now. They're just out for themselves. And the Hound kind of objects, says, no, they're mine. I want to kill them. And then there's like an argument here for a negotiation of who gets to kill these people. I was like, just kill them. You know? But he tries to kill him with the axe, and they're like, no, we hang people. He's like, fine. So he kicks over two of the three chairs. And I did like that the Hound, after they're dead, he kind of goes, you got any food? And he says, yeah, we do. And he goes, I prefer chicken, which is just such a – after all the jokes of chicken in the last season or season before last, it was just I died laughing.
I also really enjoyed the part where like he was negotiating about like why can't I kill them with an axe?
Yes.
Because it's more humane to it's over quicker with the you know hanging them. Meanwhile, he chopped the dude's head off with the axe in a second, and those guys were like shaking their like choking to death, being hung for like 30 seconds up to a minute. I feel like just let him cut their head off, and it would have been much quicker.
Exactly. And everyone likes to see a good head chopped off, too. I don't know.
Yeah, it's probably because Beric Dondarrion didn't like the fact that, you know, the Hound chopped him in half at one point. So he's like, no, you got to hang him. I don't want to have bad memories of that.
Right. I mean, he's just trying to be a holier than thou because, you know, they're red believers in the red god. Why didn't they burn him to death, really, if they're believers of the red priest? But, yeah. I agree. I would have just done the Hound's way.
And it's at least more exciting to see, too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But then they try to get the Hound to come to the north with them, because they said, you know, which is also strange. Like, why are they wanting to go to the north? But they try to get the Hound to come along, because we need good men, and you're a good man now. And the Lord of Light obviously thinks you're a good man because you gave you the power to beat me, to which the Hound just widdly comes back. He's, no, I'll beat you because I'm better than you. You've always been a crap fighter. Yeah.
To Tim's point, it's great to have the Hound back. He's a great character.
Exactly. Yeah, but then Beric Dondarrion does kind of echo, though, Ian McShane's words at the end there, kind of saying, you know, you can help more people than you've harmed. It's not too late. So that kind of gives you a little bit of optimism in that Hound, there's still hope for the Hound to fix his ways. But, you know, I agree. I think he's going to join the Brothers Without Banners now.
Yeah, that'd be cool. That'd be cool.
Yeah. And then the next scene, we have Terminator 2.
As it's affectionately called on the internets.
Yes.
And that's not being facetious.
We have the Lady Crane visits Arya once again, and to give her more soup. And the Waif surprises her as she comes in, and she's in disguise and kills Lady Crane. And I didn't. it looked like she folded her like a chair. I only got to watch it one time, but it was just like her body was kind of weird the way she was dead. Did you guys see that? I thought it was weird.
It was. She was like impaled on the chairs.
Yeah, that was pretty rough.
She was up on the stool. She was like going to go for more milk of the poppy. And then she was like impaled on the stool or whatever. It was definitely not as Jock and Hagar asked, it was not a quick and painless death at all. But but again, it's like one of those things where it's like, you know, Arya wakes up from the milk of the poppy sleep. Just in time to
the
be
healing
like, oh,
sleep.
Yeah, the healing sleep. And then, you know, instincts are like, jump out the window. You know, I'll be okay.
Exactly.
She's going to do like some acrobatic leaps.
But she's done some training in the House of Black and White.
Of taking falls. Like, she apparently they do stuntmen work as well. Because she rolls for a million stairs and then is like... She lands on her ankle, which would break anybody's ankle, and she's fine, you know? It's like, oh, I'm bleeding again from my wounds.
But she wasn't bleeding. That was the orange thing, or the grapefruit.
It was?
That's how I saw it, because when she's rolling down, you see one of the grapefruit smash, and it kind of looks like blood. I'm like, oh, she'll probably smear some of that on her stomach, act like she's hurt, draw her into her little hidey hole, her little pokey hole. And then, you know, but she won't really be hurt. She'll pretend hurt, but she's not really.
Well, that makes me like the scene even less.
Because it does. It's like, if anyone's been in the hospital ever, especially if you're on morphine, you're not going to get up and just run or have your wits about you. You're going to be groggy. You're going to pass out. She's had two deep stomach wounds. I mean, you're going to start bleeding again. It made no sense that she's just hauling butt through this town and is actually like jumping suicidal jumps and not breaking bones or anything. And exactly, like, kind of like I expected it to all be kind of a ruse. So maybe she wasn't bleeding, and it makes good sense about the orange or the blood orange, because I thought like when she was kneeling, she was going to get up and be like, oh, I'm completely healed, you know, from the power of soup. And and then like you'd actually see a cool fight, because like she fooled the waif into thinking that she was wounded, but she's not.
So see, there's some angles there that aren't horrible.
Mm. I mean, it wasn't. I was entertained. I just was expecting more. I was like, oh.
Okay. So the waif is arguably trained as a faceless man, right? Yeah. She could be actually be a guy, right? That couldn't be. That not is not necessarily even her original face, if we think about it, right?
Right. Absolutely.
We're just assuming like that might be her base face or whatever. We saw when like you know what was the last scene when Arya's taking all the faces off of Jock and Hadar's or whatever how you say his name. But. Here's the thing, like, isn't she like one of the worst assassins of all time? It's like she's up on like the part when like she loses Arya, then she goes up on the roof, and then instead of like running and jumping onto Arya, she decides to run and jump behind Arya and lands on people and gets noticed. Like, why doesn't she do like ninja stealth assassin drop down and like, you know, slowly sneak up and kill Arya again? Like, why is it a big old chase scene?
She should have been like Leon in The Professional, you know, just exactly like sneaking up, like, you never know where I'm going to attack.
Yeah, I hate this scene. I don't like this.
I think I've gathered that, Tim.
It's terrible.
Oh man! All right, let's go to the last scene here, as we're kind of running out of time.
Okay.
But yes, go.
Okay. All right. So anyway, Arya cuts the candle and it fades to black, and you don't really know. But then you go to the House of Black and White. You see Jaqen H'ghar sees blood splats on the floor. He's following them down to the Room of Many Faces, and he sees the waist face cut out and stuck on the wall with blood coming from the eyes. And then Arya's standing there behind him with needle and sticks it into his chest and says, you know, you told her to kill me. He says, yes, but here you are, and there she is. Finally, the girl is no one. And it's one of those, like, you're not sure, is he bluffing, like, to maybe to spare his own life, or did he actually believe she'd become no one? It could be a bit of both, but then it's like, why are you really proud? He just killed your assassin. He's like, shouldn't you, because he gives her that little smirk of, like he's proud of her, but then he ordered her death. So it just didn't make sense.
It's because he's bluffing. Like, how is she no one now that she killed the waif? It doesn't mean anything. It's like she failed at doing the assigned duty of killing, you know, lady, whatever her name was, the actress. So that's how she would have became, a faceless man. This way, she's just like, surviving. It's like, congratulations, you killed obviously our worst assassin here, who couldn't kill you the first time, and then decided to have this big, long, drawn out. Had she shown up 5 minutes early, she could have killed you when you were asleep. Like, the waif is the worst, and. And I think Jock and Hagar is just like, you're no one now. Cause don't kill me. Welcome to the club. You're no one now. The House of Black and White. Thank you. Move on. Let's get back to Westeros. Who cares? Braavos is terrible. The House of Black and White's terrible. Let's get out of this horrible place.
Right. But yeah, she does look at him and says, I'm Arya Stark of Winterfell and I'm going home. And this is also a questionable thing to me, too. I'm glad that she knows who she is now and what she wants, but then she's already said with the actress, what's west of Westeros? Yeah. So is she really going to go home, or is she just going to go wherever she wants?
Or is that just a little nugget of information there that maybe will show up in somebody else's storyline or something down the road?
What?
Is that where the eagles are that are going to save the day when the White Walkers seem to have destroyed everything?
The dragons are the eagles of this story.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Yeah. They save the day.
But
anyway. It's all you need to know about Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit. Just, if there's walking and eagles, that's all you need to know.
Cool. Can we all agree that that's enough Arya, like in the next two episodes, or we don't have to see any more Arya? Like, let's just assume she's on a boat getting back to Westeros, and we'll just see her next season. Hopefully they, do the Dorne thing and, be like, oops, we screwed up. Arya's cool now. We'll give her – we'll just put her back with the Hound, because that's what we all want, right? We want to see her and the Hound back together.
Yeah. I would actually say that's a safe bet that we probably won't see Arya again this season. Because where can they go with it other than her getting on a boat to waste 2 minutes of our lives? That's it.
Well, if she got on the boat at the end of this episode, she could be in the north by halfway through the next one.
Yeah, true. Fast travel. You know why this episode was named No One? It was because who likes Arya's storyline? And that's the answer.
God. Just hating.
The haterade is deep. All right. Well, that is what we three thought of this episode. Let's go into what you thought with listener feedback. We'll kick off with our first call right now.
Jay, Jack, and Nick, this is for Game of Thrones. Just thinking about the theory that Jon Snow may possibly be Dannery's relative. If so, I was just thinking, perhaps he will be fire resistant like she is. I don't know, just a thought. Tell me what you think. If so, it would be good for him to be a dragon rider too, because then he wouldn't get in the flames in any way, shape, or form. Okay, bye.
Thank you for the call.
My
bad. It was playing again. Go ahead.
In book one and season one, they've both shown that Jon Snow is not fire resistant. He got burned in the Hand. In this show, it's when the two Whites that were former members of the Night's Watch come in. He gets burned by the torch. And in the same way in the book, pretty much. But, I mean, there's a lot of good theories. Because even in the books, Dany is not completely fire resistant. A lot of people think that actually stems from each time that's happened, that she's been engulfed with human sacrifice inside the flames, and that is what her power comes from, to hatch dragons from that. But that's just a kind of an out there theory.
There you go.
Anyone else?
Yeah, what's the other book reader think?
Yeah, I was just gonna say the same thing. As Jon Snow got burned, up at the wall already once, so probably not fire resistant.
I mean, it's just a little ruse. Maybe it's not like full on fire resistant. He's just like a quarter. He's a quarter fire resistant.
I feel like for the show, what they have done is made Dani 100% fire resistant. Like, I feel like the fact that we know that she's not fire resistant comes from our knowledge of the books. And I feel like I even read something that where George R. R. Martin said, like, oh yeah, her like surviving the fire, that's a one time thing. Like, in the books. So we know in the show now, she can be on fire if she wants.
Very cool. Very cool. I agree with you guys. It seems that way, but, we have seen, greater, leaps before, possibly. All right, let's go to the next call here. Wait, hold on. I messed it up again. All right, going back. I'm sorry. Here we go. One more time.
Hey, Nick, this is Jan. I just wanted to call and say how much I'm really enjoying your Game of Thrones podcast. It's really, you guys do a really great job, and I think you're spot on with all your stuff. I do want to say yay for Arya, kicking some ass and walking out saying Arya's dark. All right, talk to you soon. Bye.
All right, Jana liked the Arya stuff today. Come on, there's somebody. What?
That was our good friend Jana making a nice joke from the previous week, but the fact that I wasn't acknowledged in our phone calls. Yes. So it's my podcast this week.
See, there you go. Nick's got to get some love. He's the most important person on the show.
Nick, I got to say, you do a great job on the Game of Thrones show. Not so much on Married Man, but
Thank you, Tim.
Little rivalry there. If you guys don't know, we're rivals on the Married Man show.
But the beef has been dropped for just one episode today.
Oh no!
Oh, of course.
Yeah, of course.
Oh, okay.
This is a This is a tenuous alliance between houses right now. But I'm looking to red wedding him at any moment.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, let's go to our last call here.
Hey, Jay and Jack, this is Mike from Michigan, and I just got reintroduced to your podcast. I'm so glad you're doing a Game of Thrones one. Love the Lost podcast, and just heard your latest episode. And now that there's going to be crackpot theories again, since the books are done, I want to add my crackpot theory. I've always thought it was weird that they emphasize so much the comet, and in the previews or the opening credits of the show, they show the comet, and it's got all the stag and the dragon in the comet. And now the Game of Thrones basically has everything. They've got zombies. They've got time travel. They've got old world stuff. I'm just going to put in that there's aliens. That's not actually a comet. That's actually a spaceship. There's not really gods. There's just aliens just kind of messing around with the planet, doing whatever they want. So that's my crackpot theory, just for fun. And glad you guys are doing it again. Looking forward to the next episode. Thanks.
All right. Thank you for the call.
I like it. It's true, though, because the comet, it's one of the things they do express even on the show and in the books, that the comet in season one meant, or at least when they talked about it, it meant different things to different people. So it clearly can mean that it's aliens, too. Come on.
Wow.
Not really. Not really.
So that's the comet, in the opening credits? I always thought it was just like the sun of the board game, you know, that they're like going over. Like, I just thought, oh yeah, this is the sun. That's interesting. I learned something. I think you got to remember, though, this show is hard fantasy, not hard sci-fi. So I doubt it's aliens.
Why not? It's like if you can't disprove it, to use the old Jack idiom, you can't necessarily completely knock the theory down.
Hopefully the aliens got soup, because then that'll help everybody. If they show up with soup, then no one's dying anymore.
Well, thank you so much for the calls, guys. Again, your feedback is what helps make these shows even better. So thank you so much for calling. Tim won't be back next week to crack jokes at your calls, so please feel free to call in. Number is 385-309-0311. So, now it is time for the best section of the podcast. It is time for what happens in the book stays in the book. Nick, now actually we have two book aficionados, but it's still Nick's segment here. So Nick, take it away.
Hey, but Tim can interject as much as he wants.
So. Oh, I will.
Oh, I he does, have he, no doubt about
he
that.
He doesn't get to inter. He doesn't get to interject at home too much, so this is his one outlet.
Okay. It's not a whole lot, but in Marine, the second siege of Marine with the ships arriving is in the books, but it's at a different time because this is before Danny's attempted assassination during the whole
Coliseum.
That's what I'm thinking of. Okay. The Yunkai are in siege for many weeks around the city, but it's on land. It's not by ocean. And this is the whole reason why Danny was forced into marriage and then ending slavery and all this, but then the assassination attempts, and she flies away on Drogon, and that's kind of how the end of Book 5 ends. So this has happened, but now they've moved it later on into this the show for reasons. But also now the Ironborn have arrived as well to help relieve the siege. But this is just at right now. At this next book, it should open up with this huge battle in Meereen between the Ironborn and the siege of the Yunkai, and then possibly if Dany gets back with the dragons or whatnot.
Yeah. Sorry, not Nick. Tim, your thoughts here.
Yes. Well, book readers, they call this the Meereenese knot because
right.
it's not great in the books. Like Meereen is so I hate Meereen. Like it's funny because like Dany was one of my favorite characters in the books until like Feast for Dragons, which is the last book where it's like it's a lot of like hurry up and wait. It's just like okay, she's trying to learn how to govern, and it's it's boring. No mm-hmm. politics, but it's kind of boring to, it's no House of Cards going on in Meereen. So I think, go ahead.
Well, I was saying it's also called the Meereenese Knot because whereas in the show you can leap through geography within one episode and it'd be no problem. Mm-hmm. George mm-hmm. tried to make everything linear in the book to where it follows a fairly good timeline. And he was trying to get everyone and everything to arrive at Meereen exactly at the right time for this battle or how the politics unfolds itself instead of, having to write like one chapter and then have 20 chapters before you get back to that character. He wants it to be perfectly spaced.
Right.
And that's one of the reasons why that's called a knot was him trying to figure it out how to get it all together.
Right. I also think that the big question is where's Varys going? And mm-hmm. I don't know if you're going to talk about this yet, but I think that like it does have a lot to do with what's happening in the books that like might be characters that aren't introduced into the series. So I don't necessarily want to say, but like I feel like where Varys ends up going in the book isn't going to happen. I feel like he's going to actually end up maybe somewhere like one of these other houses that are involved in the book and not involved in the show yet.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's say that he does go back to Pentos mm-hmm. to get this possible Targaryen king.
Sure.
You could do that for a couple episodes. And go ahead.
I actually am thinking he's going to... He said we need friends in Westeros, so I feel like it's more likely that we're seeing him hook up with even like going back to Dorne. Like,
yeah.
I feel like Dorne is the question mark, like they started, we got the one, the first episode of Dorne where they're like, yeah, Dorne sucked last season. So let's kill everybody and we'll move on. Well, wouldn't that be a perfect house to join Dany in the rebellion against the Seven Kingdoms if that's going to be the case? And Dorne is probably mm-hmm. the one that's the house that's most upset at the Lannisters right now. Or even there's another person who showed up in Meereen that was from a different house, if you know what I mean, Nick. Mm-hmm. I don't know how much to say or not to say, but that involved the dragons.
Right. I know.
Okay,
and exactly, it makes sense for him to go to Dorne too. But then I'm also thinking about what we talked about with Cersei earlier, and the fact mm-hmm. that if she does burn down the Red Keep from madness, let's say Tommen dies in this fire, who is now going to be in charge? Who's going to have the power? And if Dany is really going to come across the Seven King, I mean the Narrow Sea to conquer, it's best if the Seven Kingdoms are in chaos versus organized. So if Cersei is now in power, but her one person that's trying to hold the strings together is Kevin, her uncle, as the Hand of the King, it makes more sense for what happens at the end of Book 5 with Tyrion. With Varys to know, like, we're not going to let you get organized. We want it to be chaos.
I just feel that, like, the show isn't doing that with Kevin because Kevin is such a non-character. Like, it would make sense if he was involved, kind of like, Tywin was involved. Like, we see him actually trying to keep everything together. But we're at the point where the Faith Militant, or the Faith is basically who's running, the Red Keep or running the Crown. And so, to me, it's like, yeah, Kevin's the Hand of the King, but really, what does that mean now? He got to tell Cersei, go stand in the back with the common folk. You're not up here anymore. But is he at the position where he's like trying to keep everything together? I think the King's Landing's in chaos already.
True.
And that it's gonna and I think the wildfire is what's gonna burn down the Faith Militant. And I think that, like, Cersei's such a terrible person that she's gonna, like, do that to get rid of, the High Septon, but it's gonna take out her son as well. And I think maybe we lose Cersei this season as well. Nothing from the books, but just a theory.
Just a hope from you.
Yes. Kill her. She's the worst. I mean, I like to hate her. I mean, I would be sad to see Cersei go because, I mean, honestly, you got to think Cersei's ending is going to be truly awful because she's such an awful person. And if she inadvertently kills her own sick child, that seems pretty poetic, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I agree. And it just, because she is... Her character, at least in what we've seen this whole time, is she's too. She just goes for fight, kill. And there's not really any strategy to it, and she just kind of burns her way through so much and leaves so much in her wake. But it's only, I think it is poetic that she would do something and use the wildfire, and it would backfire on her. I think would be fitting for her character.
Please, Cersei, die.
All right. Well, I think that's a good.
Oh, no, we're not done.
I think. Oh, you have more stuff? I'm sorry.
Yeah, we're not done.
Okay,
that was just
ahead.
The first one.
Oh, we okay.
Just
all right.
Dang it, Tim.
Yeah.
Oops.
Yeah. There's little bitty ones, but like King's Landing, a trial by combat, has not yet been outlawed by the king. So this could happen, but we don't know. One of the things I thought was interesting, because it's the other thing that killed the theory, was that Beric Dondarrion is not alive in the books at this point. He actually gave his life up to heal Catelyn Stark to make her Lady Stoneheart.
Mm-hmm. So that kind of kill the whole Lady Stoneheart stuff then by seeing him?
I think 100% we aren't seeing Lady Stoneheart anymore because it was a real tease, though, too, because the scene right before Jaime's talking to Edmure about his sister. I'm like, oh my gosh, they keep talking about Catelyn so much. It's like we're gonna go back to the Brothers Without Borders. And really, if you're the book reader with banners. Doctors Without Borders. Brothers Without Banners. And really, it's funny because, like, in the previous scene, like, the Brothers Without Banners doing evil stuff, the book readers know that, like, Lady Stoneheart is kind of crazy and, like, kind of leads them in a different direction. Even with the hanging scene, in this episode is kind of a callback to the Lady Stoneheart scenes in the book. So, but him being there pretty much, I think, puts the nail in her coffin because it's been, what, 2 years in show time, there's no way they're going to bring her back. I think Decay and I think her body's been eaten, if anything, by Nymeria and wild animals.
Well, if she could have been hiding around sometime this whole time. But yes, I agree.
Yeah. If they were going to reveal her, I felt this episode would have been the good one to reveal her, because it would have made sense. Like the Hound walking up, seeing them about to be hanged, and then just having Common. Brothers Without Banners there, and then all of a sudden he's like, no, they're mine, and all of a sudden her standing right behind him, cloaked over her head, and then she like puts a hand out for him to be strung up, and then somehow he doesn't get hanged. But they would have been a much better scene if that would have been a reveal of like, holy crap, it's Catelyn Stark, you know, and she knows who the Hound is, so it would have made much more sense to do it then, but it didn't happen.
There you go.
The vendetta between Arya and the Waif does not happen in the books either as of now, because the Waif and her really are more friends because they're both little kids and they're more training each other. It still can happen, but I highly doubt it that we get a Terminator Waif. and the last little bit is the... the last little bit is the River Run stuff, which I have actually, it's the last kind of stuff that's book centric. But Jaime tries to take River Run without bloodshed, not because of anything other than he swore to Catelyn Stark that he would not spill Stark or Tully blood if she freed him. And he's trying, because we've seen that Jaime is a better man now. So he actually is trying to do the right thing. So that's why he wants to take the fort without bloodshed, because he's trying to live up to his word and be this honorable man, because he's been known as the Kingslayer for so long. He's trying to shed this thing about him.
Yeah. And what's really fascinating is I feel like the show is making Jaime a more dislikable character than he ends up being in the book, because, you know, it's really good. I don't know if you're going to talk about it, but in this scene, at him at River Run, he's there trying his best to keep it from violence. But and also he basically ends up turning his back on Cersei to do the honorable thing and do the, you know, she's basically begging for his help because she's like locked in the Sept at this point before the Walk of Shame, and like I need you. And he throws that letter away because he's like I'm done with you.
Right. That's what I've said, like I think in two episodes back, was that one of the reasons why he went up there is not because he's sent up there, but it's because he's trying to gain his honor back. He's trying to distance himself from Cersei because she's insane right now with power, and then she gets put into the Sept and he just wants nothing to do with her. And so exactly when she pleads for help, he's like, no, you know, you're on your own. You have your own troubles right now. And plus, you know, like I said, he doesn't have a hand. He's learning how to fight again. He's really trying to become someone else at this point. Now, the threatening of Edmure, he did do this in the books, but it's not quite as brutal. And at this point in the show, it's really not characteristic because they've been trying to show him as a nice person. But this one is freshly back from getting his hand cut off, so there's still elements of this evilness in him. But all he does, though, in this one is kind of say, like, surrender the fort to me. You know, you haven't seen your baby yet, so you'll have your house seat back. But if you betray me, then I'll send you your baby by catapult. And that's enough for Tully to go, oh, okay. And
he means business.
Yeah, he means business. And then, you know, he does surrender the fort, but he does not surrender the Blackfish. The Blackfish does escape. He helps... Edmure Tully does help the Blackfish escape once again in the books. And that's another what we were talking about earlier. It's just another reason to, let's kill off a character because we don't want to pay him anymore.
All right, Nick dropped off there. But if, Tim, you want to play the role of Nick for a second. Hey, is there anything else left in this section here, Nick?
No, boy, we got it all. That's it. We covered a whole book. That's it. That no more book sections, because I read all the books and they're done.
Very good. All right. So thank you again for another fantastic. What happens in the book stays in the book.
Oh, apparently the last one too.
So Nick has said to go on without him. We're here at the end. So give us a call at 385-309-0311.
Call anytime.
There you go. Good job. Also, you can send us an email to lostpodcast at gmail.com.
Yeah, I know gmail.com. I don't know what at gmail.com.
At gmail.com. Just lostpodcast at gmail.com. That's it.
Oh, okay. Okay. I screwed that one up. Sorry.
You did. It's all right. It's okay. Jack's shoes are hard to fill. All right. You can also join our Facebook group at facebook.com/group/JayandJack group. Become a patron today over at jayandjack.com. Click the link, become a patron. We have a partnership with Loot Crate. You can sign up today for less than $20. You get $45 worth of geeky goodness sent to your door. Go to lootcrate.com/JayandJack. Use the promo code JayandJack to get a special discount on your first Loot Crate. All right, that is it for this week's episode. Tim, thank you so much for jumping in and filling in for Action Jackson. Very much appreciated.
Thanks for having me.
I think you did a fantastic job. All those things people say about you are totally wrong.
San Antone.
And you are also going to be the next guest host on our Married Man show. So if you enjoyed what Tim brought to the show today, he doesn't do anything remotely like this on our Married Man show. So definitely check it out whenever.
Fan favorite.
Well, like the second fan favorite, maybe. All right. And actually, what's pretty exciting right now is we have a new podcast coming up. It's The Broadcast, which is kind of a female-centric podcast tackling some topics like The Married Man, but even more general things in life that women may face. That's going to be hosted by Colleen Glatfelter. You might know her. Also, Shandy from The Tribe. Tim might know her. And Amanda Giordano, who was one of the guest hosts on Colleen's old podcast Metro Buzz. So that will be recorded later tonight and posted up, so definitely check it out. And also, I think there's a new Hell on Wheels podcast that the Jack and Cindy podcasting duo have recorded. It is also up on the whole Enchilada feed. Will soon have its own feed. All right, guys, that is it for this week's Game of Thrones with Jay, Jack, and Nick with special guest Tim. We'll see you guys next time. Hasta luego and goodbye.
Bye.